On Sunday, December 12th, hundreds of white Australians violently attacked Arab and Muslim youth in the area of Cronulla Beach and in the rest of Sydney, Australia. Most of the white races chanting anti-Arab slogans attacked Muslims and Arabs for over 3 nights. Arab and Muslim youth responded in the following nights, mounting the same type of resistance that was seen in France. This is an interview with Rehab Charida, an Arab living in Sydney, Australia, who works around issues of colonization, immigrant rights, and Palestine solidarity. Rehab talks about the conditions that the Arab and Muslim community face, the real racism, which has been rooted not only in Australian society, but the government laws, only worsening since September 11th. Rehab also describes the events that took place on December the 11th in Cronulla Beach. This interview was conducted by Adam Hanea, Hazem Jamjoum, and Mustafa Hanawi for CKLN 88.1.
About 2 weeks now, there's just been a lot of tension in the streets, and you know about the riots, obviously, that took place here. And it has caused, tensions have eased a little bit, but there's still, it still had its effect on the streets, I think.
Could you give us some background for people listening who may not know as much?
Well, the background to the specific, riots that have taken place in the last, week or so, they kind of started in Cronulla, which is a beach on the east coast of Sydney. Basically, there was a fight that went on between some Arab boys there and lifeguards. And 2 days later, there was a massive demonstration, I don't know what you want to call it, by a bunch of Australian guys that took place in Cronulla. A lot of the things I was saying were racist, and it sparked a lot of anger on the part of the Arab community in Sydney. So there was a bit of retaliation on the part of the Arab boys. And ever since then, it's just been basically, it's raised a lot of issues that I believe are very important that have been silenced for many years now. And it's basically, one of the issues that's been raised is the question of whose land this is. And the Australian boys, a big part of it for them, it's a territorial thing for them. And they're talking about reclaiming the beach. So there's the obvious question of, reclaiming what? And so the question of whose land this is, it's basically been silenced. Even with all the publicity, there's been no mention of the Indigenous people. There's no mention of, what went on in Cronulla to the Indigenous people there. So things like that have unfortunately been silenced by the media.
Rehab, I was wondering if you could, I know one of the things that has been going on in Australia as well has been the new wave of laws that have come from John Howard and the real increasing racist sentiment that's coming out of the government over the last few years. What kind of effect has this had on what has happened over the last couple of weeks?
Well, it's definitely, what's happened the last couple of weeks has, if we're going to put it in the wider context, these laws, as well as many other things, definitely play a role. The government has been, a lot of its justifications to push these laws have been that, Australia is threatened by Muslim or Arab terrorism, and this threat has allowed the government to, increase or basically toughen its immigration policies, mm-hmm. which has meant that many genuine asylum seekers that are coming from the Arab or Muslim world have not been able to enter, have been locked up by the government. It's also meant that these laws that are mostly affecting Arabs and Muslims have been able to, get pushed through, and they're being justified. We are believing these lies that Australia is a threat, of Muslim or Arab terrorism. People that have been, the ASIO, which is Australian intelligence body here, it's raided the homes of mostly Muslims and Arabs. So already the people who are being affected directly by these laws, are Arabs and Muslims, mostly in Sydney and Melbourne.
Could you give us a bit of background to what the laws are? What are the kinds of changes that have been pushed forward by the Howard government?
Sure. Well, there's the anti-terror legislation, anti-terror bill. That's basically, since September 11, these new laws are being introduced, you know, all the time. Things like the government has the right to detain you for up to 2 weeks and you can't speak to a lawyer or anybody. These laws are keep getting tightened and tightened all the time. You know, the ASIO can raid your home. They can, you know, detain you, that you don't have the right to speak to anybody. There's also these new laws of sedition, which are very, very loosely defined. Like, if you say anything or do anything that they believe incites basically resistance, and when I say resistance, I don't just mean violent resistance. Any form of resistance that opposes the government's or the mainstream opinion can be seen as, it falls under the terror laws. There's also a lot of Indigenous communities here have been affected by these anti-terror laws. For example, there was a demonstration against all for land rights, and most of them were detained. Police said that they positioned themselves in a place in the city, and under the new terror laws, they weren't allowed to assemble there, basically. So it's affecting a lot of activists, in different ways.
And what about, I understand, I think it was a few months ago, there were also some demonstrations that happened in Redfern, an area of Sydney where there's high concentration of Indigenous people. Has there been any kind of links built between the Arab communities and the Indigenous people around the latest kind of racist attacks that have occurred?
There has been, quite recently, and I've been involved in that. I mean, it's obvious to both, the Arab communities and the Indigenous communities that both communities are being targeted by these new laws and by the government. Those riots that took place in Redfern were sparked by the death of a young boy there. The police chased and killed a young Indigenous boy, and I suppose those riots were specifically about deaths in custody, the deaths that are behind police, that were caused by the police. That's what they were about specifically. But since the Indigenous people have not been able to assemble as well as other activist groups, and so these laws are obviously targeting not just Arabs, not just Muslims, but, anybody who opposes government opinion or public, mainstream public opinion.
So you have a situation basically where people from these migrant and Indigenous communities have been basically victims of these government policies over several years, if not decades, and in the case of Indigenous people, centuries. And you have this big response, and of course there's been like a big police retaliation, as we saw in France, and we've heard about the police retaliation in Australia. Canada, the Arab community, for example, has these sort of official leaders. Things like in Toronto, for example, there's the Canadian Arab Federation and the Palestine House, and there's these things that sort of are supposed to represent the Arab community at large, or different segments within the Arab community. I'm wondering how has, and I'm sure there's these kinds of organizations as well in Australia, how has this official Arab community representatives, how have they responded to the concerns of their community that's been showing through these riots and these direct actions taken by particularly the youth?
Yeah. Unfortunately, I don't think that their response is representing the way that a lot of young people are feeling. In a way, I can understand why they say some of the things they say. I mean, they're afraid that if they do speak out honestly about how these young guys and girls are feeling, then it's just going to cause, more of a backlash on the Arabic and Muslim community. And I can completely understand that, but I don't think that it's productive. I think that the issues need to be raised in a real way. I mean, most of the so-called Arab and Muslim leaders are saying things like, we're all Australian, we need to all get together. And so there's a lot of shaking hands and hugging in front of cameras going on, but there's no raising of the real issues. So
who is this shaking hands and cozying up to happening with?
Well, there's representatives of, some of the groups that kind of live around the beach areas that are being affected, like Maroubra, Cronulla, and other beach areas. So, people that are supposed to be shaking hands in front of the cameras with some people from the Arabic and Muslim communities. And they don't really represent anyone. Even the Australian people involved are not really representing a lot of the way these young Australians feel. These young Australians were expressing a racism that is quite real. And to actually say that, no, Australia is not a racist country, to shake hands and smile in front of cameras is not, to me and to a lot of young people here, it's not addressing the real issues, because Australia is a racist country. I mean, what we saw in Cronulla is just, you know, it was just a display of the racism that, you know, goes on here on a day-to-day basis. So a lot of people were shocked by what happened in Cronulla, but for a lot of us, we weren't shocked at all, because, you know, we experienced the racism from Australian society every single day.
What kinds of things did people see in Cronulla that highlighted racism to people who were ignoring it before?
Well, Cronulla has actually always been more racist than the beach culture in, I mean, Sydney's on the coast, right? So there's a beach culture that exists here, and beach culture is quite racist, and it's pretty white. It's kind of like a surfing culture that's very exclusive and very racist. And so Cronulla has got a history of racism, but I don't think that the racism that we're seeing now on the streets, something that goes on in Cronulla, it's something that's Sydney-wide and Australia-wide. And I think that, you know, it's reflected in government, reflected in, like, a lot of, I mean, the mainstream in Australia are quite racist, and towards Arabs, towards Muslims, you know, towards non-Australians. So I don't think that it's something that is just going on in Cronulla. It's being expressed by the guys in Cronulla in a different way, and I think that the way that they expressed it, I mean, one thing that's bothering a lot of us is that a lot of Australians are pointing to the riots that went on in Cronulla, saying that these guys are quite racist, and it kind of, it lets everybody else off the hook. And I think that these guys in Cronulla definitely were racist, and they did express their racism in quite a violent and brutal way, more violently or brutally than most Australians would, but that's not to say that racism in a different form doesn't exist elsewhere. It does. We see it, I mean, for example, if we're going to look at immigration policy, the largest number of overstayers in Australia, people who overstay their visas, are from the UK, followed by the US and then other European countries. However, the people that fill the immigration detention centres are all brown faces. They're mostly Arab, they're mostly Asian, and African. You know, we can see that if we look at any one of the Australian policies, international policies, immigration policies, we can see that we're not living in a country that's free from racism, and that's I guess what I'm trying to get at, that these issues need to be raised.
Not to highlight the kind of the organized fascist element as opposed to the Australian government, but many people raise questions, that the fascists and that the Australian boys, as you kind of call them, kind of had showed up to the beach already, kind of with their shirts and their slogans, you know, "Lebs out of Australia," we grew here, "You flew here," that this was kind of an already well organized violent attack against Lebanese, that the incident itself, in terms of the two kids that got into an incident with the lifeguards, wasn't necessarily a catalyst, that the violent attack and by these fascists had already been kind of pre-planned and pre-organized before this incident.
Well, that's definitely true, and I guess that's what I'm talking about. Like, to give this situation a bit more context, there were two major things that shifted in the last 3 or 4 years. One is there were some gang rapes that occurred in Sydney that were allegedly, these Arab boys were involved in, Lebanese boys, and then there was September 11, of course, and that shifted, I don't think it necessarily shifted, but it at least gave, you know, everyday Australians a green light to express their racism towards Arabs. I believe it was already there anyway, before these things happened. But these gang rapes have really caused a lot of, you know, it comes up all the time. You know, anytime anything happens, these gang rapes are raised. And so a lot of the stuff that's, I don't know if it's reaching you in Canada, but a lot of the stuff that's circulating in the media here is this issue of gang rape. And even there's emails that are being sent around by, you know, groups of, like, fascist kind of Australians talking about needing to get together and fight these rape, you know, gang rapists and these terrorists and blah, blah, blah. So it's actually, it's coming up quite a bit. And one of the way, like going back to Arab Muslim leaders and the way they're responding to things here, you know, they're coming out saying, look, you know, rape, you know, Islam opposes rape. Of course Islam opposes rape, so does every other religion. Like the fact that they have to go out there and talk about, you know, to try and justify that they don't condone rape, I think is problematic, because of course not every Arab or every Muslim is a rapist just because a group of, you know, boys were involved in such a thing. The other thing is, I mean, Australia has a history of rape. I mean, there are many, you know, fair-looking indigenous people in this country. That's because of the rape that is part of Australian history. But we don't go around asking, you know, everyday Australians to justify or explain themselves to me, or explain whether or not rape is part of their culture. So it's this thing of always putting every single Arab and Muslim on the back foot, always having, like, Arabs and Muslims always having to explain or justify something. That's another thing that's quite frustrating, and Arab and Muslim leaders here have fallen right into that. So they're, you know, explaining, we're not terrorists, we're not bad, we're not blah, 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 we're not this and we're not that. And I think that it should be quite the opposite. I mean, Australians have a lot of explaining to do to us. I mean, the Australian government is involved in the war in Iraq. What more violent, you know, how much more violence do you want than supporting a war that throws cluster bombs on civilian areas? You know, cluster bombs that tear children apart. You know, they need to be explaining things to us. The Australian government here has always supported Israel, has always been a strong supporter of Israel. It was an Australian who read the partition plan in 1947, and every single Australian government since 1948 has supported Israel. You know, that's violence. You know, Australia has supported violence against Arabs for as long as, you know, we can remember. And so I feel that the Australian government and the Australian public needs to explain things to us. Rather than the other way around. It's quite frustrating that Arab Muslim leaders are not expressing this anger that many Arabs are feeling here. They're not expressing the anger that we have, you know, that's a result of the racism that we've experienced here, as well as, you know, the anger that we feel towards what the government is supporting in Arab countries, you know, overseas.
One of the things, Rahab, that I was shocked about reading some of the statements that came out from the Arab and Muslim groups and so-called community leaders over there were statements that were calling for greater police powers or congratulating the police on their job and calling the police, you know, supporting the role of the police, whereas the police, I think, historically in Australia has been one of the most racist institutions in the country. Deaths in custody, as well as the daily profiling of people that takes place.
Absolutely. I mean, I witness on a daily basis, you know, young guys sitting on the train, you know, maybe a big group of guys, you know, 10 guys or so sitting on the train, and without fail, if the police enter the train, they will get harassed. You know, I see it every single day. You know, young Arab guys getting stopped by the police all the time simply because they look Arab. And giving the police more powers and having the police harass the boys even more, I tell you, it's not going to get rid of their anger. It's only going to make these guys more angry. Not just these guys, but people who see it, you know, people who are aware of the fact that the police are racially profiling young people and harassing them based on their colour or their race. That's going to make a lot of people more angry. And so it's not going to deal with anything. But I think that the government is using all of these things that's going on to increase their powers. I mean, that's obvious, but I don't think it's going to deal with anything at all. I think it's only going to make things even more tense, and it's going to build the anger that already exists within people even more.
In France, at the end of the riots, the solutions that we saw, the kind of the piecemeal solution, that this was about social conditions, this was about actually structural problems. One is that similar to the kind of the what the media is saying or what people are saying in Australia, but on the other hand, when France decided to push through the state emergency laws on these youth who had been rioting, most of the actual state emergency laws had been about trying to quash these kind of youth from actually politically organizing this kind of this rage that is taken on the streets, that to ban public meetings, to censor the media, to place curfew, and that even the French government had come out and said that what's even going to be more of a threat if this actually becomes politically organized and have a real articulated voice. is this the same worry in Australia? And is this happening? And is this spontaneous, or is this does this have serious political organizing behind it? Or is there the actual threat of actual real political organizing coming out of this?
Well, I mean, there's a lot of this is spontaneous. I'd like to say that it was, you know, highly politically organized, but a lot of it is spontaneous. You know, guys are reacting to, you know, built up, I suppose, anger and frustration with the way, you know, things are here. But there are, you know, a small group of people who are trying to organize in a serious way. This has been undermined slightly by, you know, Arab and Muslim leaders who are trying to kind of push people away from thinking about it even. And it's also been undermined by, I suppose, the left here, who are kind of like, you know, talking about, you know, we're opposed to racism and on both sides, and not really dealing with the issues that have been raised here. So there are a small group of people, but there's so many forces working against us. And also these new laws make it quite difficult to organize. I'd imagine that Australian democracy works in the same way that Canadian democracy does, and that is you're free to think the way the government wants you to, you're free to act in the way the government wants you to, but if you're acting or organizing in a way that is contrary to government opinion or mainstream opinion, then that's not okay. You're not free to do that. So it's kind of even hard to organize. You know, there's also new laws that have been introduced just last week that relate specifically to the situation that's going on now, and it's basically to do with the riots and stuff. So the police can confiscate your mobile phone or car if they believe you are in any way related to or organizing anything, whether it's violent or not, that to deal with this issue, basically. So we can't basically openly organize, which is very limiting. It's quite limiting, but you know, it limits us in many ways. But there are people who are trying to, you know, raise the issues, the political issues. There's a group of us that are made up of Indigenous, African, Arab, and South American activists that are getting together to try and raise issues relating to, basically, firstly, to raise the issue of whose land this is that we're standing on, and also raise the issues of, you know, race, like the racism, like what this racism represents, basically.
For any of the Arab youth listening to our show tonight here in Canada, do you have any kind of, like, final thoughts?
I guess I'd imagine that the situation there isn't much different from here. I guess, you know, building solidarity between, you know, youth here and youth there would be a good thing, like, you know, over the internet or whatever. But yeah, my only thoughts are that, you know, you're right, this is only the beginning, and I guess that we have to deal with these issues that come up and, you know, fight them head on.
This was an interview with Rehab Chirida, who spoke on the recent racist attacks in Australia at Cronulla Beach and the response by Arab and Muslim youth. Rehab also addressed the question of state racism as well as colonization in the context of this violence. Rehab also discussed the issue of Australian foreign policy and the effects it has had on immigration and on the Arab and Muslim communities in Australia. This was an interview conducted by Hazem Jamjoum, Adam Hanea, and Mustafa Hanawi for CKLN 88.1 FM here in Toronto. ¶¶